Welcome into another edition of the Angry Quarterbacks. I'm Richard Skinner from Local 12 and Local12.com. But the real quarterback, he is Tony Pike of UC, Reading High School, and Carolina Panthers fame, and a noted quarterback whisperer in the area.
Guru.
I watched one of your quarterbacks on TV Saturday night, Cam Hergett from Beechwood. Made some good throws. They lost 7-3.
Taft.
He made some good plays. Taft's
got some athletes.
I tell you what, they are really well coached.
They've got a good nose tackle.
Yes, they do.
That guy plugged up the middle.
He really did. We'll talk some high school football coming up in segment two. Segment three will feature college football, but we start with the National Football League and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Mm.
All right. I bought in week one that maybe this coaching staff could scheme around some of the deficiencies. And the second half of the Buffalo game made me think, they got a little rhythm running the ball, looked like what they wanted to do with their play-action game. This offense maybe is going to start to evolve. Now it's pretty convincing to me that, and I know people are thinking you're going to say it's on Zach Taylor. It may be. I still don't know the answer to that. It's pretty plain, though, that, and it happens to a lot of teams in the league, you eventually get to the realization that it's time to reboot, rebuild, whatever you want to say. I'm at that point now. What say you, Tony Pike?
Yeah, and the problem with this year is that for the last few years, the organization has had a scapegoat because it hasn't been the roster. It's been, well, Marvin Lewis has to go. And that's what people have been able to talk about the last couple of years. Well, now Marvin Lewis is gone. You bring in a new face. You bring in a new staff. And now the roster is being exposed. It's not Zach Taylor, which everyone's talking about. It's how bad the roster looks right now.
And let's be clear real quickly, not to cut you off. It was time for Marvin Lewis.
Yes,
it was time
absolutely.
For a new voice. That,
yes.
You'd reach that stage of the game. But
you're
right. And I think the front office, either they deep down really thought that all it's going to take is a coaching change.
Right.
We don't have to do much. This guy's going to come in and fix it. Or they just tried to buffalo the fans of, hey, we got you your coach. That's what you wanted.
Hey, new coach, it's going to take him some time.
Yeah.
You know,
But they didn't go that route, though, that it's going to take some time.
Right. They made the choice, and they made the statement that we're going all in for this year.
Yes.
You didn't draft for the future. You didn't.
No,
you didn't,
right.
Right. Like you drafted to try to win this year. You go out, and here's the thing. Yes, it's time to start the rebuild, because what they've done is they've just put all these Band-Aids on different problems, and those Band-Aids rip up, and the problem's worse.
Yes.
The infection is spreading, whatever you want to. But what that would take is something that this franchise has never been willing to do.
That's
that would be to make these moves. And look,
and I'm telling you right now, if you don't, and I think it's the time, I said it on another podcast that I did, you've come to the time now where your moves either better pay off in grand fashion. Let me backtrack. What you have to do now is, honestly, you have to give the fan base the fact that you're bringing in a bona fide NFL caliber general manager with that title that we can now point to and go, it's on him.
Yep.
I can't point to anybody. I can point to Duke Tobin a little bit and go, dude, your drafts have sucked.
Yep.
But I don't know if it's all on him, because
right.
the coaches have had input along the way. I still can't tell you with any definitiveness, and maybe you can, maybe you know better than I do, I can't tell you who officially makes the pick on draft day.
No.
I can't. Can you?
No. And
would it surprise you if I told you it was Marvin Lewis?
No. Nope.
Back in the day? Would it surprise you if I told you it was Duke Tobin?
No. Nope.
Would it surprise you if I told you it was Mike Brown?
No. We have no idea. And the problem is that when you put all these draft class together, so this year we were told Drew Sample. Drew Sample right now
best blocking tight end in the
draft. Out of 10 rookie tight ends playing, he's the lowest ranked
best
blocking, run blocking tight end.
You're stupid, because he's the best blocking tight end in the draft.
Yeah.
Remember?
Well, there's 9 other tight ends that are run blocking better.
Well, it's because he's getting a lot of snaps, though, Tony.
There's 9 other tight ends that have more catches, completion, or yards, touchdowns, everything than Drew Sample.
But he gets a lot of snaps.
Yeah. Jermaine Pratt.
How's that working out?
We're not going to go get Quan Alexander and overpay him.
No.
Because we got this guy from NC State,
that's
Jermaine
right.
Pratt.
Yeah, he's going to, yeah.
What's he doing?
His
reps were taken this week by a guy they signed, last week?
He did get a couple reps, but Leroy Reynolds has gotten more snaps than he has. Yeah.
So all you've missed in the draft. Yes, there's been some bad luck to that. But at the same point, if anything's going to change, if I'm the Bengals, I call the Bears and I say, hey, you guys are close. What would you be willing to give for Andy Dalton? I call a team like the Patriots. Hey, I know the Antonio Brown thing didn't work. What would you give for AJ
Green?
Yep,
no question.
Geno Atkins. Just find ways, because right now you look across the league, I can go through every team that has at least something to look forward to. Even the Miami Dolphins, as bad as they are, They are stockpiled with first-round picks.
Yes.
They can look forward and say, hey, we're putting our eggs in this basket. You can go to Arizona, Kyler Murray, number one overall quarterback. You can go to all these different teams. What right now is that for the Bengals? Because you can't say Joe Mixon, because if I'm Joe Mixon.
Zach Taylor.
If I'm Joe Mixon, why would I want to re-sign here anyway with the offensive line that's assembled?
And folks, in case you're wondering, after next year, Joe Mixon becomes a free agent.
And what have these running backs, high-profile running backs, done as of late? Just hold out.
Yeah, right.
So the answer is not Joe Mixon. Is it a quarterback that will be in his 10th year? Is it an aging defense? Is it where? Is it John Ross? Is it Drew Sample? Jermaine Pratt? Who? Who going forward do you put your hat on and say, well, we can build around this guy?
Tyler Boyd, but you're not building around Tyler Boyd.
Right, so all of that, you're mixing all that. I just don't know at this point who that is for the Bengals, and if that's the answer.
And the problem is, if you're going through this reboot and rebuild and maybe a different philosophy, because the philosophy has been, and I've agreed with it, of draft, retain, and build with your own. And, yes. and it has worked. I mean, it worked to make them 5 straight playoff appearances, right? Yep. It worked. But now you're starting to whiff badly in the draft. Some of it, not no fault of your own, but some of it, absolute fault of your own. Maybe you got over your skis and thought you're a super genius and that anything I decide is going to be the right thing. Well, all I can tell you is, since really the Cedric Ogbuehi, Jake Fisher draft, it has been nothing but disaster after disaster. And that's why we are where we are right now. Your organizational philosophy isn't to dive into high price free agents. It's to pick at the scrap heap to plug in a gap. And that's okay if the other 19 or 20 spots are really good because you've drafted and retained. But when you're starting to plug in John Miller at right guard, who really can't play, and Bobby Hart after last year at right tackle,
that was our big offseason signing on the offensive line.
Then suddenly you've got a roster full of deficient players, and that's where we are. So that's why I'm saying, I'll go back to, do you have faith that this front office is capable of having an organizational philosophy or a philosophy switch and or rebuilding this roster to make it better? I don't.
At this point, I don't. And at this point, when you look, and I know different things have happened. I know it wasn't going to be their once-in-decade talents, but this team in the past few years chose to pass on Lamar Jackson. They passed on a guy like Mahomes and Deshaun Watson to go get their guys. So they have passed on the...
And I'm okay with that because I think they had a capable quarterback. But then when you're trying to draft for the other position groups to go around that and you whiff...
It doesn't work. So then you either should have went and got one of those guys and built your team around a rookie quarterback salary, or you have to nail some of these guys. And when you don't do it in the draft, then you have to do what you're not comfortable with and go make a big trade. Well, or you have to go sign a big free agent. That's what you have to do if you want to win in this league. And now,
I thought Malik Jefferson had a good game Sunday, didn't you?
Yeah.
Last year's third round pick?
Yeah. But now, when you're not doing that, and this is the product that's on the field, I mean, think as a Cincinnati fan base, mentally, how we act. Week one, well, they were close. That's a mental win.
I don't even know if it was close. I think it was just...
It just felt different.
It just felt different, yeah.
So then you talk... I was talking myself on Monday afternoon into saying, you know what, if the Bengals beat Pittsburgh...
Oh, I was...
And then they beat Arizona... They're one game out.
They're a trip to Baltimore.
From being in first. That is where, as a Cincinnati fan, I've resorted to trying to tease myself and talk myself into this stuff.
I think Monday honestly was the best thing that could have happened as a journalist and and for those that are fans, maybe for the organization of, you know what, you bottomed out.
Yep.
And we saw the bottoming out process that this roster needs a complete and utter overhaul, and you better start doing it sooner rather than later. And listen. I think Andy Dalton's a more capable quarterback, I believe, than you think he is. But I think if you're in that process, then he's up for sale. He's up for trade debate. I got no problem with that. AJ Green is absolutely open for that. Geno Atkins, anybody. I mean, there's
The problem is if you don't do it with AJ this year,
you're
and he walks.
Yeah. What did you?
How bad do you look?
You look stupid.
Yes.
And there's no way. This will also tell me. I want people to understand when I say this. This is not an indictment on AJ Green. He's a terrific talent.
Yeah.
He's been injured a chunk over the last few years, and that starts to make me worry a little bit. He's going to be 32 when next season starts. He doesn't have the fountain of youth, although he's got a body that looks like he could play forever. He doesn't because the body's breaking down to some degree. Some of it just the nature of the game. But are you going to throw a ton of money at a 32-year-old wide receiver on a team that's got other giant holes?
Right.
You can't do
and
that.
And I know, and
if
I know.
If you do that, it'll tell me that, honestly, you don't know what you're doing.
And I know AJ says all the right things, but if you're AJ Green, do you want to come back for a rebuild?
I would say deep down, probably not. But I think he is one of those guys that would love to spend
his whole...
Well,
the problem, AJ, is AJ looks up to Larry Fitzgerald.
And maybe,
they're close,
yes.
And that's like the Larry Fitzgerald model.
Yeah.
But Larry Fitzgerald made it to a Super Bowl.
He made it to a Super Bowl. And I think AJ, when he has said this, and he said it actually to us right after he got the boot off, that he would like to stay in Cincinnati, I think he's absolutely sincere in that. But I also think at the time he said it, maybe he got... buffaloed into thinking, hey, we're not that far away.
Yeah,
you are. You're way far away, man. You're way far away. You're three linebackers, and eventually a new quarterback, and at least
one guard
and one tackle, because you do get Jonah Williams back, and we don't know if he's going to pan out either. But the hope is it was the right pick to make. Let's give them that. Whether it pans out or not, that was the right pick to make. Yeah, so you're at that stage, if you're him, of do I really want to be a part of this?
Right. Is this how I want to go out?
And if you're the Bengals, you can't afford to do that, though.
Right.
And even if he gives you the hometown discount, it's still a sizable chunk of change he is going to make on the hometown discount, too.
Correct.
So get some value. You got to the end of this month to get some value.
Yep.
And look, I'm not here to tell you it's time to turn to Ryan Finley as your quarterback and make him the quarterback of the future.
Right.
But if you can swing a deal for Andy Dalton by the deadline, that's really good.
It gives you an opportunity to see what Ryan Finley is.
Yes.
And then you attack the draft next year.
And you're right. I think for him, it would be a team that like a Chicago Bears, that has a lot of good parts.
Yep.
And Andy Dalton is way better than Chase Daniel, and he's not going to screw this up. And hey, he just needs to come in and be kind of a manager. And he's an upgrade over what we have
good
now.
Good offensive line. Yeah. I mean, there's teams... I look at the Packers. You put A.J. Green on the Packers. You put A.J. Green on the Patriots or something like that.
The Saints.
Right. I mean, there are teams that if you really wanted to make something happen, you could start making some calls because historically the Bengals don't do this. So,
but historically, that's why they've gone 3 decades without winning a playoff game.
Exactly. So at what point, if Monday's not the kick in the gut, when is?
Yes.
Because the football product on Monday,
How old are you?
33.
33. So basically in your lifetime, you've never seen it. Even in the playoff win, you were too young to remember.
Right.
I mean, I grew up at least and saw 2 Super Bowls, but I've also now seen 30 years of this. And I think as time goes on, I hope we don't get to the point in 5 years where you go, you know what, man, Marvin deserves a lot more credit than we even gave him. And he does. He deserves a lot of credit. He changed the culture of the organization.
Yep.
But
you're... You're walking a tightrope now if you're the Bengals organization of losing a fan base.
Completely losing it.
I mean, you go to other fan bases, like, and Mo Egger mentioned this yesterday. You go to Kansas City, that fan base loves the Chiefs, no matter what.
Yes.
The Browns.
Bills. Dude, I was just in Buffalo. Those people are nuts.
They love their teams. You don't see that here.
No, because you've gotten kicked in the head too many times.
So at least...
And it's generational now. I mean, again... Right. You're at the age where you're going to start to have your own children here at some point, right? And so now you're at the point
never going
to
win,
right? They haven't done it in my lifetime. Hey, kid, maybe they'll do it in yours,
right? I mean, and even the Browns didn't win a game a few years ago, and that fan base loves them,
right? But what did they then do? They went and got a competent general manager in John Dorsey.
Yep.
They decided Hugh Jackson was a clown show. Let's move on for that. And I don't know if Freddie Kitchens is the answer either. That feels like a jump the gun moment. But they brought in a qualified NFL general manager who has done things in this league to build a team.
And that's my thing. It's not a 5-year rebuild process in the NFL.
Three.
If you get the right guy, you can do it in 3. And you could start seeing the fruits of that in 2.
And you've already got, from a rebuild perspective, I'm getting a new piece in Jonah Williams at some point, maybe later this
year.
You're
going to get a high draft pick to start next year. Why not stockpile draft picks and start that way and give yourself every opportunity?
If not, and they have done a good job with their dollars, and more so than people think, because they've always put money in what I would call the rainy day account to sign A.J. Green and re-sign him, to re-sign Andy Dalton when they did, to extend to Giovanni Bernard. They've always had, to extend Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap. I'm not asking you people to agree that those were the right moves, but I do think that they were, and that's their philosophy.
Yep.
All right, let's go away from that then. The rainy day fund is gone. I'm not going to re-up A.J. Green again. I'm not going to give him, just because he's been a good soldier and a great guy, and all those things. I'm not paying for that because it's cost inefficient. It's not. It doesn't make any sense when you have all these other issues.
Yep.
But I got to be honest, I don't have faith they do it right. I have no faith in it.
And that's the problem.
And I think that's the problem with the fan base. Yep. Is the fan base now says, yep, I don't have faith in you people doing this because you're going to try to do it your way. And guess what? In 30 years, your way has not worked. Paul Brown, and you can look and go, why'd they have success before this lengthy run? Because Paul Brown was alive, and Paul Brown knew football, and he knew what football players look like and how to build a football team, okay? Yep. Paul Brown died in 1991. It is no coincidence that it has not been since that point in time that they have won a playoff game.
Right.
It really isn't.
Well, the problem is, and I mentioned this, the game of football has changed. I mean, you talk about 10 years ago, when I was coming out of Cincinnati, it was, he's a shotgun quarterback. You can't make the transition.
Right.
That's all they do now.
Yep.
Every team, the game is changing. The tempo is changing. The skill set you need to build a roster is changing.
And that's where Zach Taylor may be the perfect guy to coach that.
Yeah, but you got to get those pieces.
Yes. Yeah. That's where money to me was just the final. Yeah. It was almost like, good. I now saw it for myself completely that maybe I fooled myself in week one of thinking, all right, maybe this roster at least is good enough to do some things this year with these guys. No.
But look what the rosters have done. Look at the Saints, who lose Drew Brees and have two of the most impressive wins on their resume the last 2 weeks.
You're right.
Because of the whole roster.
Yeah.
Look what the Kansas City Chiefs do. They lose.
Look at the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, they lose Kareem Hunt.
They've survived Cam Newton's loss.
Yeah. Kansas City loses Kareem Hunt. They lose Tyreek Hill. Still doing what they're doing.
Jacksonville had that team that went to the AFC Championship game 2 years ago. Still have the core of that team. Thought they needed an upgraded quarterback. Did that. And now without that quarterback, they're still winning games. Because guess what? That core of that AFC Championship game is still around.
Yes. It is possible to do it. But again, that means you have to have the confidence in an organization that hasn't done it for 30 years to finally say, we're going to do it. And maybe the San Francisco game was a start. Because as good as they looked in a loss to Seattle, That game against San Francisco wasn't sold out. The fans haven't bought back in yet.
No.
This Sunday,
it's gonna be,
there's going to be more people at Nippert Friday night than will be at the game on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals.
I'm assuming, if they sold out Friday night's game?
Yes.
Okay, then they absolutely will, because I think the season ticket base for the Bengals is somewhere around 35,000.
Yeah.
That will be the announced attendance, whether that's even that many people in the place or not.
I mean, the average price, and the Bengals are one of the lowest, the average price to take a family of four to an NFL game is like $480.
Yeah, are you getting bang for your buck?
Is that what you want to do?
Yeah. No.
On a Sunday?
No.
When I could sit at home and watch the Sunday ticket and watch every NFL game I want?
And guess what happens to the fan like you that does that after 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and you come to the realization of, honestly, this is more enjoyable than going down to a football game.
Yep.
Unless they were to win on a grand scale, and I mean, like, let's just say they make a Super Bowl run 1 year.
Yep.
That'll get you back.
I have found
But if you continue muddling in the 9-7, 7-9, you're not coming back for that.
Yep.
Maybe a game, occasional game.
I've found myself more interested because of how they play. That I'll make it a point to watch the Kansas City Chiefs.
Sure.
I'll make it a point to watch the Saints. Tampa Bay right now is fun to watch because they're scoring points. I'll make it
Tony,
a point
as
to
you
do
know,
all that.
As you, I mean, I cover the Bengals on a daily basis. And so this past Sunday, I actually had a chance to be a fan.
Right.
Like, I turned on the Red Zone channel, didn't turn it off.
Right.
I mean,
glorious.
It's superb.
Yep.
I got a feel for literally every NFL game. And occasionally, because the Kansas City game was in this market shown, occasionally I'd go back during a lull to go back and watch a little bit of that game, right? So it was perfect for me. And if I was just a fan on a Sunday, and I grew up a Bengals fan. My dad was a season ticket holder. We went from the time I was, we moved back here in 70, 74, 75. From that 75 season on, we went to every game together.
Yep.
And as a journalist, once I got into this and looked how this organization was run, and part of it is then you become a journalist and you get a little cynical and you get a little jaded and the fan in you goes out, I realized, how do you people root for this club?
Right.
I don't get. How did I do that?
Well,
because Paul Brown was alive and he built good teams.
Just imagine what this weekend did if you're a Bengals fan. You got the chance like you did on Sunday to watch all these other NFL games. And then Monday night on a national scale, you watched your quarterback get sacked 8 times. You watched an opposing quarterback making his second career start throw 16 passes to the running backs. Dink and dunk you all the way down the field. Your linebackers were inept. Your offensive line was inept. And then you're thinking to yourself, man, wasn't that the problem last year?
Wasn't it?
And now it's worse right now? So you're, as a fan, you almost come across like, well, do they care? Why should I care? I just watched brand of football on Sunday that was really good, and I just watched on national TV a chance a chance to rewrite the script and a chance to say, you know what, we still have a chance, as crazy as it is this year, and you go out and you don't just lose, you embarrass yourself, and you embarrass the Cincinnati Bengal name on your chest.
And you can't just go, it was one of those games the line didn't play well. One of those games the linebackers didn't play. No, it's consistently that way.
Right.
I really think that they believed, in their heart of hearts, that they believed that all it was going to take was a new coaching change and new coaching staff.
Now they know that's not the case.
Yes. And I wanted to be clear. I don't know if Zach Taylor could stink for all I know, and Zach Taylor could be a freaking genius for all I know. I know this. He doesn't have a chance.
Right.
He doesn't have a chance to win
football. What's been given to him
games.
Right now isn't fair.
No, that's correct.
It's not fair. It wouldn't be fair to any coach that took this job.
And listen, when we're talking about this reboot and rebuild, there are some pieces in place. I would tell you this. William Jackson is a capable cornerback.
Yes.
Drake Kirkpatrick is okay, but he's capable.
Yep.
I think your safeties are capable.
Jesse Bates, yes.
I think your defensive linemen are capable. I think you've got pieces there.
Yep.
You need a complete overhaul at linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it's time to move forward with the quarterback thing. I'm kind of on board with that. I don't know if Ryan Finley will fit the bill, but I'm on board with that. You have Tyler Boyd in place now for a chunk of years. Maybe you extend John Ross into that fifth-year rookie option, which I'll ask you a question on here in just a second. I think running backs are easy to find in this league.
And I
really do. So I don't know if I spend a lot of money on Joe Mixon long-term.
I don't think I spend money on Joe Mixon.
But you got Jonah Williams at left tackle. You've got at least enough guards that I think if you put good tackles around them would be more capable.
Yep.
So you're only maybe
Michael Jordan for the future.
Yeah, maybe you're only a right tackle away from solidifying that, and Jonah Williams away from solidifying. So I don't think you're miles off. Yeah, you're not miles off.
But you have to be willing to take that chance now. And this team for forever now has shown that they are not going to take chance, and they're going to play it safe, and they're going to just patch this. I mean, we were sold on the offseason that, well, Preston Brown's coming back and he's lost weight.
I bought it.
And Bobby Hart.
Silly me, bought it.
Bobby Hart. John Jerry didn't play football last year. Didn't play football.
That's a fact. That is a diet.
John Miller. And those are what Cincinnati gave us and said, hey, look what we're doing.
And our new coach.
Look at this.
Remember, it's a new day with our new coach.
Look at this flashy stuff over here, and we're just going to backdoor sign Bobby Hart for $21 million. Like, what? What are we doing? But we didn't want to pay Quan Alexander? Who came out against us and looked like an all-pro?
He was all over the place.
I mean, it's just time and time again, Giovanni Bernard. We re-signed Giovanni Bernard because he's going to have a big role, and he doesn't have a role.
He has no role.
Like there's just question marks all around this team that people have built in and people have bought in around this city to try to cling to something.
I think that's part
because
of it.
There's so many fans that are like, I've been a fan for so long, and I don't want to give up on this team, and I'm just going to cling to this one last thing.
I think that last thing is gone. Yeah. I think that's
what's dangerous, because a lot of fans are at that point now where they were clinging. They're like, screw it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
All right, John Ross, it sounds like he's going to be out about a month or so, maybe longer. Who knows? He's finishing year three, showed some flashes this year, but has been either injury-prone or unproductive for the most part. He's dealt with some drop issues this year, too. As a first-round draft pick, you can exercise a fifth-year option on him next year. Do you do it?
At this point, with how you're going to reorder your roster, I think it comes down to that. I think if you're going to sell some pieces, then I don't have a problem bringing John Ross back and saying, okay, let's try to plug him in on this new regime and this new system and see what he can do.
Because you saw some productivity,
there's
right?
There's been the flashes. Mm-hmm. But again, this is also It doesn't help John Ross that the offensive line's terrible.
No, right.
It doesn't help John Ross that Andy Dalton has no time.
Because his main weaponry is to get him in space down the field.
And you can't do that with the offensive line.
No. No, you cannot at all. A couple quick NFL things to touch on inside the division. I count me as those that were not surprised that Cleveland went to Baltimore and won, because I do think Cleveland's roster's better. Did people overreact on Lamar Jackson, or now am I overreacting going back against thinking Lamar Jackson can be a quality quarterback the way this league is played?
I think Lamar is a good quarterback. Okay.
You're not alone.
No, I watched the game. They dealt with a lot of drops in that game. Mm-hmm. They had some misses. Chris Moore needed to be better. Andrews had a couple drops.
Their defense was a sieve.
And the defense, which is something. I mean, they're relying on power running game and a good defense. When you get down by a lot of points, that brings up Lamar Jackson's weaknesses right now, which is just I got to drop back and throw the ball 40 times. That's not what they want to do.
No.
But when they're playing their system and they get what they want, I still think he's more than a capable quarterback, and he scares me to death thinking the Bengals got to go to Baltimore with our linebacking core and seeing what that's going to do against Mark Ingram, Lamar Jackson, Andrews, and company. So I still think there's a good chance that Lamar Jackson ends up and proves a lot of people that are doubters wrong and a lot of people that have backed him right. But like you said, the Browns, to me, I think they figured it out a little bit. I think Freddie Kitchens, instead of trying to get all these pieces involved, said, look, I have a really good running back.
You still thought they were a 10-win team last week, right? Yeah.
Yep. I mean, they're going to have seven games.
I think Sunday proved your point that they're still a very capable team.
Yeah, I think they just figured out, like, hey, our running back's really good, and we're going to run the ball first. Yeah,
pretty novel concept. Yeah,
unreal.
And being effective in doing that.
Yeah, crazy.
Is there a chink in the Rams?
Yeah, I think the inability to run the ball right now, and a lot of that starts up front. I mean, you talk about the Bengals, there's other teams that struggle on the offensive line, too. We just see them work around it.
Yes.
We haven't seen that from the Bengals yet. But to me, the offensive line running the ball for the Rams is in question. I think their receiving corps fine. I don't know about Todd Gurley. I'm interested to see what's going on with their defense.
Yeah.
Because on paper, they should be dominant.
They should be dominant.
And
Aaron Donald alone
makes
that defense dominant.
And again, they have a get-right game coming up here in a couple weeks in London.
In London.
They'll get their confidence.
The get-right game. All right, in a couple of other divisions, in the AFC South, where everybody is 2-2, who do you put stock on? If I gave you a $100 bill and said, Tony, you get to bet on one of these teams to win the division, who would it be?
In the AFC?
Yeah, the AFC North. The AFC South, rather.
I don't know right now.
I don't either. It sounds like a cop-out, right?
No, it
I can make a case for Jacksonville doing it, and Jacksonville not even coming close. I can make a case for Indy doing it,
I see Indy this week against the Raiders.
Right. I can make a case for Tennessee doing it, and Tennessee not doing it. I mean, literally, it's everybody in that division I can make a case for and against in a big way. That's why they're all 2-2. I gave you the $100 bill. Who are you putting it on?
Let's go Gardner Minshew.
I'm going with him, too.
If they can figure out and get Jalen Ramsey to be back
in. Shut his mouth and play.
Shut up and play. Yes. And I think a lot of that with how they started was Jalen Ramsey, like, I'm done.
Yeah.
But now that...
And then I think the rest of the team said, good, we're done with you, then we'll just move on.
And now back-to-back wins, I think you can sell back to Jalen Ramsey, like, look, we're not far off here.
No, not at all.
We can win this year.
I mean, Leonard Fournette looks rejuvenated and revived, and Minshew is, while he's not great,
and again,
he's done a lot of good things.
They're one of those teams that they have a get-right game coming up.
Yes, forget about that. The get-right game's coming in 3 weeks, I think, for them. And then let me go to the other side of things in the NFC East. Did Sunday Dallas loss say more about the Saints or more about the Cowboys weren't as good as we thought, especially offensively?
I think it says more about the Saints, and I think, again, that is a team.
I mean, they locked up Amari Cooper. Locked him
up. And that's Lattimore was excellent. I'm still not sold on Dak Prescott. They have a 31-year-old offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore who's going to go through growing pains. Mm-hmm. And that Saints in New Orleans, tough place to play, loud. It felt like they'd lost their game plan and composure a little bit. They still have Ezekiel Elliott.
Right here, I'm going to give you $100 again. Okay. Right? Get the $100. You got to make one of two choices to win the NFC East.
Okay.
Dallas or Philly?
Dallas. Philly's got too many holes right now.
I'm going Philly. I like Philly. Okay, so you got Dallas and we both got the Gardner Minshews in the Jacksonville side of the game. So we'll go with that.
Deal.
Except now you've got my $100. I can't even make my own bet now.
I got money now.
Daggone it. I
just saw a Pro Football Focus put this out.
Yes.
It says, this was among the five worst offensive line performances we have seen in the Pro Football Focus era, with their offensive linemen taking home a Pro Football Focus pass block grade of 21.4.
And they do that on a scale of 100 being the most.
No team lost more matchups in a single game in the Pro Football Focus era than the Bengals did Monday night. They also gave up a franchise record amount of pressure.
You know what? As much as I like Pro Football Focus, I didn't need them to tell me that. I think I saw that with my own two eyes.
Just to solidify that, I did bring the point home. Just to round out this segment.
Exactly. All right, when we come back, we'll talk some high school football. Big matchup this Friday night in the Greater Catholic League South and really in the city. We'll talk about that and much, much more. We got college football coming up in segment 3 as we roll along from the James Rapine Memorial Studio. This is the Angry Quarterbacks from ESPN Media.
Is it weird that since we had James Rapine on that John Ross has went back downhill?
And Lamar Jackson's 0-2 since then. It's weird, isn't it?
Yep.
We'll be right back.
Getting answers, finding solutions. Local 12 News investigates.
As soon as we called you, everything happened very quickly.
Not afraid to ask the tough questions. Taking action, getting the truth. Local 12 News investigates.
Welcome back into the Angry Quarterbacks podcast. I'm Richard Skinner from Local 12 and Local12.com with the real quarterback, Tony Pike. We're getting some college football, big game for UC coming up on Friday. I'm going to guess if we look at our four playoff teams, we may have a shuffling in that of teams we would select today. We got some Ohio State to talk about along those lines. But this is a segment on high school football. Big matchup Friday night. Elder St. X in the Local 12, top 12. I moved Elder back to number two, Winton Woods to number three after Winton Woods lost to Lakewood St. Edward, just slightly worse than Elder lost to them.
Yes.
Which tells me St. Edward's pretty damn good.
Yes, they're good.
But one versus two, so that's the matchup. X and Elder. You've seen these teams play.
Yeah.
Probably you've seen X a little bit more maybe, but you've seen both play. Yep. You know about them. We've talked about them. It is at St. X. I don't know how much home field means in high school football. You're only traveling a little bit across town, for goodness sakes.
It means stuff when teams, when GCL and I talked to my brother about this who went to Elder. That St. Ed trip is tough.
Oh, yeah, that stuff is tough.
Like, that stuff is really tough in high school. But no, a short trip like this shouldn't make that big of a difference.
All right, but who you got and why?
I'm going to have to, at this point, from what I watched St. X on Friday night, I'm going to have to go Elder because...
Really? I thought you were going the other way for sure.
Well, I think St. X is going to be at a score points at a high pace, which they've done a lot this year. But watching St. X's defense, and I didn't just watch it against Moeller. I've watched different games this year. They're not fast on defense. They give away the edge really easy on the outside. Moeller was able to move the ball. Moeller's able to hit him down the field with some shots. When I look at the Elder offensive line, the tight end play, the ability to run the ball and possess the ball, because if you want to beat St. X right now, keep their offense off the field.
Yep.
And Elder's going to have the ability to run the ball and control the clock. And I'm not saying...
Their offense has been consistently great almost all year long. I mean, the loss, and the flaws have been on the defensive side of the football.
Now, what will be interesting is St. X play with a tempo against Moeller on Friday night that I haven't seen in a high school football game with how fast they were snapping the ball in the first half. And it led to, I'm not kidding you, I think 15 Moeller guys went out with cramps
in
the second half.
Yeah.
And I know it was hot, and it's unseasonably hot, but...
But they must have seen something that said, let's tire.
Yes, because they haven't shown a ton of that tempo this year.
Yeah, let's face it, for Moeller, this is a very atypical Moeller team that doesn't have a ton of talent across the board. So if their starters are struggling the way they are, they probably haven't used their depth a ton because of that, right? So if you're X, hey, they're not playing a bunch of guys on defense. Let's just go ahead and go with that kind of a tempo.
And they did. And again, I think what's interesting against St. X and Elder is Elder's going to be the one that's possessing the ball for long drives. So I don't think X can afford to go a ton of tempo. Because if you start going tempo and you run into a quick three and out or another quick three and out and your defense is just getting punched in the face with the running game, all of a sudden you got a really tired group out there on defense. So I think because Elder has the ability to possess the ball a little more, but this to me is like a 35-31 type of game.
That's exactly it.
Because I don't think either defense can stop the other offense.
Not consistently enough. Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I will say this. I mean, the job that Matthew Reavy has done at St. X, coming in kind of the unknown guy this year, because they've had Clifford, who's doing great things at Penn State. Yeah. You got Wolf at Wisconsin. You had Hudepohl coming in last year. It's kind of the unknown this year, and he's handled everything that's been thrown at him in a great way. So I think that again, 35-31 type of game.
In the this week's Harbin ratings that were released on Tuesday, in Division I Region 4, St. X is number one. And again, these are computer points, so it's not that they anointed X number one. Right. X has earned those points. Fairfield is number two, and I am really looking forward. I do Princeton games, the only game I'm not doing, unfortunately, this Friday, although we will have the broadcast for you. Princeton at Middletown, among them. We also have West Claremont at Loveland and LaSalle taking on Moeller. I'll be broadcasting that game for Star 64. That game is at Princeton. But I'm really looking forward to seeing Fairfield in 2 weeks. They have Lakota East this week, which Princeton just came back and won. And then they have Princeton, and they still have, at the end of the year, Cole Rain. But they handled Lakota West pretty easily last week, 33-7, after that Hamilton scare a little bit. I think this is a really good team. I do think there is a gap between X and Elder to them.
Yes.
And then a gap maybe from them and Cole Rain to, I think, all the rest in this region.
Yeah, but again, what Fairfield possesses, when you start talking about football,
they can defend.
Bad weather,
and
cold weather.
McClain.
Yes, they can run the ball and they can defend, and those two things carry a lot of weight.
Yeah,
when you get into the state playoffs, so that's a team to keep an eye on. And maybe they stumble a little bit, or a pass-heavy team gets them. But I don't think when you get in the playoffs, the formula is you have to be able to run the ball and you have to play defense, and they check both those boxes.
Yeah, I do think they beat East this week. They'll be undefeated. I think Princeton's got a new lease on life coming back to beat Lakota East, down 21-7 at the half. It looked like their season was heading towards a non-playoff season and unraveling quickly. They've got a get-right game this week, too, with Middletown.
Go.
And suddenly you look up, and they've got a chance to be 5-2 with an undefeated Fairfield rolling into their stadium. They played fairly toe-to-toe with Colerain. Colerain was the better team,
right.
And I think they played 10 times. Colerain still wins 9 of those. So I think that sets up to be a great showdown next week, but that is next week. Elsewhere in the region, though, from a Hardin perspective, Fairfield was 2, Elder 3, Lakota West sits at number 4. Princeton moved up to number 5. They were out of the playoff scenario last week, but the win over Lakota East moved them up. Colerain sits at 6. Walnut Hills, believe it or not, is at 7. Sycamore is 8. Hamilton sits at 9. Lakota East 10. Lebanon at 11. All of those teams have 3 wins. Milford also has 3 wins, but Milford probably has a lot of work to do to move back into the playoff picture there. In Division 2, it's Region 8, and there's some teams from outside the area mixed in. Canal Winchester sits at number 1, but this week it's Turpin 2, LaSalle 3, Harrison, which keeps rolling along. They're 4-1, sitting at number 4, and Winton Woods, coming off the loss to St. Ed's, sits at number 6. Now, Winton Woods is in a bit of a quandary. And I say that knowing how good I think they are. They play a team this week away, Christian Brothers out of Missouri. They are a Division I level team, so you get Division I points. They then play Edgewood, which is a Division II team, but is only 2-3. And they close out with Elder and LaSalle. It is conceivable that they finish 1-3.
Right.
To finish the season off, and I just wonder if that is going to be enough for them to make the playoffs.
Could you imagine that?
Probably will. Their win over Trotwood. Trotwood keeps winning. That only qualifies as a Division III win in the Harbins, but Trotwood sits at 4-1, and I'm guessing Trotwood probably wins out. That will help. But their other wins are over a 1-win West Claremont, a 1-win Moeller, which may not win another game, a 2-win Upper Arlington team, which I'm going to guess they will win a handful more games before the year is out, and then the loss to St. Edward, they're not going to get second-level points. So I think they're going to have to scratch out a win between LaSalle, Elder, and Christian Brothers. I still think they probably make it. I got to look here real quickly, and I didn't, to see what the gap is between them and the rest. It's a pretty tight bunch as they sit at number 6. Then Walnut Ridge, St. Charles, Talawanda, which suffered its first loss, sits at number 9. I would hate to see a playoffs without Winton Woods, because I think in the Division II level, they're at least a top 3-5 team.
Yeah, can you imagine, though, a 1 or 2 seed having to come across Winton Woods?
Yeah.
As a 7 or 8?
There's your reward.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, that would not be the best scenario. In Division III, Region 12, again, mostly teams from out of the area, the teams locally that are in the ratings. Franklin sits at number 3. Baden sits at number 4. Ross, which just got a big win over Mount Healthy last week, 48-30. They sit at number 5. And then Hughes is actually take back. Those teams are tied. Baden, Ross, and Hughes all tied at number 4. Mount Healthy a little bit on the outside looking in at number 10, but they got in the playoffs last year because of their tough schedule and some wins. They got in last year at a 5-5 record. And in Division 4, the showdown looms, Tony. Sitting number 1 is Wyoming. No surprise there. Number 2 is Indian Hill. And those two teams will play the last regular season game. Before then, Indian Hill has the following. They have Marymount, which I thought played Wyoming pretty well, 21-0. Then they have Redding, and that's always tough.
Big win this week for Redding.
They got
field goal.
Because you know why?
Why?
It was their first win. So
they scored.
So it was a big win.
They scored points.
They did score points.
Big block field goal.
Did they?
So hold on, 33-32 against Finneytown.
That's awesome, though. They got a win. That's good for them. So they have Redding, which has 1 win. Taylor has 1 win. That Finneytown team you just mentioned, and then Wyoming. So get past Marymount, and it sets up the showdown.
Not many chances for points going forward.
No, but you keep winning, you at least get the points for the win. Yeah. The points for the win are the big part. And then they got a chance the last week to pick up a bunch of points with Wyoming, or Wyoming gets a chance to maybe finish undefeated. Clinton Massey sits at number 5, and McNick at 8, Roger Bacon 9, and Bethel Tate at 10. And those are 3 actually pretty good teams. Let's go to Division 5 here locally. You've got CHCA has now ascended to number one. They're a really good program.
Yes.
Taft, I did the Taft-Beachwood game on Saturday, and I came away with a lot of things about Taft. A, you mentioned they got some dudes.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback really impressed me. He came in completing only 44% of his passes, but I don't know if you saw much of him.
Yep.
I thought he threw the ball really well.
He plays, safety as well.
And can lay the
ball. He's an athlete.
He's a really good athlete.
Really good athlete.
But I really was more impressed with him as a passer than I thought I would be.
Yep.
And I thought, I'll tell you what, I thought they were really well coached. I thought defensively, very disciplined.
Yep.
Didn't make many mistakes on offense. I really liked them. I think Jeff Cargill's done a great, great job. But they sit at number three. Summit Country Day is five. Then Madeira six. And Marymount tied for seven. Those are the only local teams, really. The other ones are way down the list. Not a lot of teams we have locally are in Division 6 or 7, but in Division 6, Deer Park still sits in the playoff picture at 7 at 4-1. Let's see what the Park's got left this year. The Park still has Finneytown.
Mm.
Probably a win, right?
Win.
But then how about this stretch? Wyoming, Madeira away, Marymount at home, and then they do finish with Reading. So possibly a 6-4 finish for the Park. Would that get the Park in the playoffs? That's open to debate. And then finally in Division 7, and this is Region 28. New Miami sits at number two. They're undefeated, but they've played one less game. They've only played four games. Cincinnati College Prep is third, and then it's a big drop off to Hillcrest Academy, which actually sits at number 11. In Northern Kentucky, Covenant Catholic keeps rolling along, but their schedule, as we've talked about, is soon to get tougher. They still have LaSalle on the schedule. They still have Highlands on the schedule.
LaSalle Covcast should be a really good game.
Yes, it should. This week they play Boone County, which will be a win for sure. They've only given up 9 points in five Northern Kentucky wins. Covcast 6-0, but LaSalle and Highlands still loom for them. Highlands coming off a loss to undefeated Boyle County, which is ranked number one in the state of Kentucky in Class 4A, so a really good program. They play a one-loss Connor team this week, so that should be an interesting game to see if they can bounce back. And in Indiana, East Central, I put them in the local 12 top 12 this week. They're number 10.
Winning.
They just keep winning. Beat South Dearborn 41-6, and I move Lawrenceburg up. I mean, Lawrenceburg's only loss.
East Central.
It was a couple touchdown loss, but they were in the game for a good chunk of
really
it.
Well, yeah,
East Central, yeah.
Yeah, they were in that game the whole first half. It got away a little bit in the second half, but since then, they've taken care of business.
Absolutely. All right. We talk high school football each and every week, and we're getting down to that point in the season where a lot of games matter and none more than this Friday when St. Xavier takes on Elder. When we come back, we will talk some college football. UC with a very impressive win and a big-time showdown with Central Florida looming. Or, I'm sorry, UCF is what I should call it. That looms on Friday night. We'll talk about what four teams we would each have in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think I'm dropping Clemson from the list. We'll see what
Tony
says.
Changing up.
Changing quickly. For Tony Pike, I'm Richard Skinner. We'll be back with segment number three from the James Rapine Memorial Studio. This is the Angry Quarterbacks from ESP Media.
For professional staffing, there's only one name you need to know. Robert Half. Robert Half custom matches our candidates to your specific hiring requirements by combining personalized service from local staffing experts with an advanced matching technology based on 70 years of successful placements. For highly skilled accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, or administrative staffing, count on Robert Half. We'll find you productive, engaged employees. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
Welcome back into segment three of the Angry Quarterbacks. We dissected the Bengals. I think we dissected them, diced them,
yeah,
whacked them up, and put them in a garbage bag and said, take it out to the dumpster. Let's start from scratch.
It's garbage night.
We did that in segment one. Segment two, we talked high school football. And now in segment three, as we always do, we talk some college football. We'll start very locally with UC. I know people are going to look at the Marshall win and go, it's just Marshall. I want people to understand, Marshall went to Boise.
Yep.
And not just played toe-to-toe with them from a score standpoint. 14-7 is what Boise beat them by at Boise. They stood toe-to-toe with them physically. I got a chance. I got back from my game that night, and when I come back on a Friday night, I grab myself a cocktail usually and then actually do our high school football scoreboard. So I'm kind of doing a couple things at once. And when I got done with that, I was by the time I was done and posted and all that, the second half was starting. I thought, great, I'm going to watch this. It looks like a really good game. Marshall stood toe-to-toe physically with Boise. A Boise team that went down and manhandled Florida State. And look, I know Florida State isn't the Florida State that we all grow up remembering, but it's still Florida State and they still have some dudes.
Right.
Right? So I honestly thought UC could go there and win, but I thought it would be nip and tuck. I thought it would be, you'd be all out to win that game, and it wouldn't have shocked me if Marshall won. My God, Tony, they kicked their ass.
Yeah, it was the most complete game I've remember UC playing in a long time.
Probably since the late 2000s?
Yeah, yeah, somewhere around
That's when they had good quarterback play.
Right, their quarterback play was outstanding.
Yes, it was.
But they've been haunted all year by slow starts.
Mm-hmm.
They got off to a fast start. Desmond Ritter looked like Desmond Ritter of last year. where he hasn't really this year up to Saturday.
And what did we talk about on last week's podcast in the bye week? And you mentioned it, and you were pretty that the week of, I think, not just physical rest for him, but maybe mental rest for him. Yeah.
And understanding, too, like, you don't have the same offensive line. You have deficiencies. But the line played well. And really what helps you see is the emergence of Alec Pierce. Had over 100 yards in the first half. A down-the-field threat makes it a lot harder for teams just to load the box against that running game.
You're going to have to play two safeties. You're going to have to play too deep a bunch.
So you get a confident Des Ridder who was throwing the ball on time. You get a really good defense. I mean, and again, like you said, Marshall was physical. Marshall
will go.
They were running.
Marshall will go to a bowl game in my
head. Yeah. They were running for over 200-plus yards a game. UC completely stifled everything they wanted to do. They made that defense that, again, that defense that went on the road to Boise and gave up 14, it looked like a high school defense against UC. And now I look, coming out of the start of the season, you figured 3-1 would be where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was just weird getting there, right?
Yeah, and you can say all you want about the Ohio State loss.
It started to look better and better.
After watching Ohio State at Nebraska, who was going to be a dark horse team this year, I don't feel as bad about the Ohio State loss.
I think, and we're going to get to Ohio State in a second, I think it's starting to show more of how good Ohio State really is.
Now, the question is, this week,
everything
in front of you in the American Athletic Conference, UCF is good, but they're not what they have been.
No, went to Pitt and lost 35-34.
Well, they saw that erasing a 21-point deficit doesn't always equal a win at Pitt.
You have to have that last coup de grace moment
of
a wide receiver making the play of his life to salvage his god-awful quarterback's bad throw.
Exactly. Just put it out there.
Let him go get it.
But, no, I mean, their quarterback, Dylan Gabriel, they just crushed the Hawaiian quarterbacks. But he shows
they've been rotating guys too.
And they rotate, but Gabriel, if he's pressured, will throw the ball into coverage. And he'll throw it up and let his receiver try to go make a play. You have opportunities to get turnovers, you have an opportunity. But that being said,
are you surprised UC's an underdog at home?
No.
I am a little bit.
That being said, if UCF gets into their rhythm offensively, which you saw against Pittsburgh when they erased, then they're really tough to beat and they're tough to stop.
I'll be honest, I watched them against Stanford and they got into a rhythm to where Stanford had.
If they're into
no
that rhythm,
answer,
you're in
man.
Trouble.
But I think this UC defense, and I go back to even the Ohio State game, Tony, I thought the defense had a good day.
Yeah.
A pretty good, I mean, I really did. I thought
it was 7-0 after the first quarter.
Yeah,
a couple things don't go their
you
way.
Know, you look back at the Miami game and they dominated that for three quarters.
Right.
And the UCLA game, while they didn't dominate, they did some really good things in that. And now you just dominated Marshall. I think this defense is really good. I think, look, you're not holding Central Florida or UCF or however, whatever you want to call it. You're not holding them in the teens, probably.
Right.
They're going to get in the 20s. But I think their defense is a sieve. And I think you get to the 30s. I think you win this game. I think the home crowd is going to be great. I think you have a lot of confidence now for your UC on both sides of the football. I think they win this game and get on a bit of a roll now. Whereas opposed, before we were looking going, oh, UCF's going to be hard, and holy cow, you got King at Houston. He's going to be hard to stop. Well, he's no longer the quarterback.
Now, Houston had a really good win against North Texas.
Yes, they did. Now, Memphis will be a Memphis might be the second most difficult game in Temple defensively. Yeah, but I mean, get through this game, and I could make a case
they run the table.
Right.
Yep. Now UCF, 2016, they lost 31-13 to Arkansas State. Since that game, they've scored 30 or more in every game.
Yeah.
So you have to go into this game offensively thinking, okay, we got to get 35 points.
But I think you can.
Yes, you should be able
to. Pitt got 35.
Yes.
Pitt got 35. Do you think UC's personnel is better than Pitt?
Yes.
I do too.
Yes.
I mean, Stanford, I think, ended up in the 30s, if not the high 20s. And their offense is a clown show.
You can score points, but again, when you play a team like UCF, you start playing outside of your normal comfort zone a little bit because you start feeling like you have to score and you have to come away with points. If you just play your game and possess the ball and stay aggressive on defense and don't let UCF dictate things, then you got a great chance to win Friday night.
I think they do. I think they win. I've been really impressed with really the last seven quarters of football. They did what they needed to do with Miami. I think they had a little first quarter hangover from Ohio State and then realized, uh-oh, we better snap out of this.
Right.
I'm telling you, that win at Marshall is way better than what you may think it is.
100%.
It's a heck of a victory. Let's move on to Ohio State. Kentucky, by the way, does not play this week, which means it'll be another week before we see wide receiver Lynn Bowden having to play quarterback because they literally have nobody else. Mm-hmm. And that's the shame of this season, unfortunately. The first guy got hurt, Terry Wilson, and then Sawyer Smith got hurt, and they're a five-ring circus right now. So we'll see if Lynn Bowden can do it. And Miami coming off of a nice win. Mentioned them very quickly over Buffalo.
To get to 1-0,
they're also on a bye this week. So let's turn our attention to Ohio State. I thought they'd go to Nebraska and win. I thought they'd win comfortably, but I didn't. I think what it shows me now is I can't underestimate Ohio State anymore, and I have to put them in the conversation for the playoffs and the national championship.
Yes.
I think it's an absolute.
When you talk about their coach has never lost against the spread, by the way. Just throwing that out there.
That's eventually going to happen. Their spread this week with Michigan State, I think it opened at like 17. It's gone to 20.
I like it.
And I think it's going to get hammered up into the 23, 24
Michigan
range.
Michigan State can't score.
They can't score. No.
Ohio State's going to score on anyone.
Well, right now, when you're talking about Ohio State, you better start at the 40-point mark and realize if you're looking at the spread, what can the other team do to get it within the number when the Ohio State's scoring 40?
Correct. Justin Fields, he doesn't turn the ball over. He can run it. He can throw it. They have J.K. Dobbins. They have Chase Young on defense.
I mean, they're balanced. It's funny. We've talked a lot about Justin Fields, right?
Yep.
And rightfully so. But you look at their offensive balance, it's almost straight down the middle, about 250 yards passing, 250 yards rushing.
Their line is dominant. I mean, look, this is a Nebraska team that before the season, people were talking about them being a dark horse.
Absolutely.
And they did whatever they wanted to Nebraska. It was one of the biggest statement game of recent memory that I can recall.
And I think that was by intent of saying, listen, you want to sleep on us, nation? Go ahead. Yep. But right now, we want to put ourselves in the conversation because the conversation has been Clemson, two SEC teams, and Oklahoma, right?
Yes.
I think you better start putting Ohio State in that conversation.
48-7.
Yes. It was, 38-0 at the half, right?
Yeah. That's could have been worse.
Could have been a lot worse.
In Nebraska.
With the Nebraskan.
They put up 76 on Miami of Ohio. They put up 51 on Indiana.
Put up 45 on Florida Atlanta, put up 28 in the first 6 minutes and decided we're not showing another thing. Put up 42 on what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you something.
And it was 7-0 after the first quarter. Yeah. I mean, they can score
at will
in absolute bunches. Offensively, they're way ahead of the curve, and their defense doesn't get as much credit as it deserves.
And that's why you look at this Michigan State game. I'm starting at the number 40, and I'm looking at Michigan State going, you'll be lucky if you get 10. Good luck.
Ohio State Miami was 7-5 after the first quarter. Ohio State scored 42 second quarter points. 42 points.
That means you had to possess the ball six times.
42 points.
So guess what else happens when you possess the ball six times? It means you either had to turn the other team over or you force three and outs very quickly, which they're very capable of doing. And then they get short fields, and that's what they're going to do to Michigan State. They're going to force them to punt and score, force them to punt and score, and then Brian Lewerke, who's not very good, will throw a pick, and you'll look up, it'll be
28-0.
Yeah, and then Michigan State is not built for the comeback mode. So I think Ohio State gets another comfortable win. All right. So let's turn our attention nationally.
Yep.
Clemson has fiddle-farted around all year long. I thought they were bored. I think they maybe still are bored. But I'm starting to wonder now, Tanner Lawrence doesn't look quite as sharp as last year. They don't look quite as sharp as last year. And I'll be honest, as we sit here today, I'm probably going to be wrong because they will probably find it, fix it.
Yep.
And they got a chance in the ACC to do that without having to worry about losses.
But this in the ACC, I think right now it's Wake Forest is the second best team.
They are the second best team.
Without a doubt.
That's incredible. So that'll tell you about the ACC. I still could maybe put Virginia in there because I thought Virginia did some good things at Notre Dame for at least
Virginia
two and a half
quarters. They almost lost the week before.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, that was.
Yeah. No, I mean,
Wake Forest has been consistent this year. I think Wake Forest is the second best team
in
that league.
So I'm going to give you this scenario right now. After I've watched Clemson for 5 weeks of this season, and I just have not gotten wowed. They've got Florida State, Louisville, Boston College, Wofford, NC State on the road, Wake the next
Wofford
to last game
catch
at home,
them.
At South Carolina. Wofford's not catch what? Catch the bus back home?
Yes.
At South Carolina could be interesting if Carolina continues to improve. I don't think I don't think they're very good.
Those won't be close.
All right, so I think we can safely assume Clemson runs the table, right?
Yes.
And if they don't, I will say this, they can't afford a loss. Not against that schedule.
Correct.
All right, so Clemson goes undefeated. Georgia and Bama, or Georgia and LSU, or Georgia and Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
One of those three from the West goes undefeated, because they all three can't go undefeated. One of those three from the West goes undefeated. Georgia goes undefeated. Oklahoma goes undefeated. And Ohio State goes undefeated.
Ooh.
Give me your four.
Man, I don't know. So as of today?
Yeah, let's go as of today.
As of today.
But I'm also telling you that they run those teams run the table.
As of today, I have Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Oklahoma.
That would be my four. And I'll caveat it with saying, I won't just go Alabama. I'll go whichever one of those three teams from the West.
But I look right now. Here's the interesting thing. To me, there's 9 teams in play.
Wisconsin's still in play. They weren't very impressive.
LSU's in play.
Florida's still in play.
Auburn's in play.
Florida, I think, loses to Auburn this week.
And a team that would need a ton to happen. But Notre Dame didn't hurt themselves against Georgia.
No, but they would, I think, need Georgia to make the playoffs in order for them to make the playoffs, right?
But, I mean, how?
Which means Georgia would probably have to beat Bama in the title game. I mean,
we're talking about all these teams. How about Oklahoma?
How
about what Jalen Hurts is doing right now?
It looks like a video game.
Yes.
And they're not great defensively. And I think
Better.
I think in a playoff scenario, I think they would be the fourth team if you said, hey, rank the four
in
the
playoffs. I'd love to see Alabama, Oklahoma.
I'd love to see that for Jalen Hurts. I would too. Yep. But they are so video game on offense, it's obscene. They're averaging this is crazy. And granted, they have not played a tough schedule yet, all those things. 668 yards on offense.
Yep.
668. That's crazy.
But when I look at them and Clemson, and I look at neither team has played a tough schedule, Oklahoma's been more impressive.
Way more impressive.
Yeah. So
I mean, they went to UCLA in the Rose Bowl and kicked their ass.
Yep.
Right? Clemson has just, they have kind of loped their way
through the season.
It's crazy
because this year you might not be able to get away with that.
I think that's for them. I think
because the ACC is so bad.
Yes. They've had this moment each year, right? Remember the Syracuse loss a couple years ago, and it looked ugly, and they had a couple games last year. Maybe that Carolina game is this, but it feels like it's more of a trend for them.
Yeah.
And there's no way, I mean, they cannot lose a game. They're in that mode of not being able to lose a single.
Oklahoma, if they win out, will have better wins than Clemson.
Correct.
Ohio State, if they win out, will have much better wins than Clemson.
Absolutely.
Alabama, if they win out, much better wins than Clemson. So all these teams.
Auburn's already got two good wins. Auburn wins out.
Yeah. All these teams start to win out, and you could very well be undefeated on the outside looking in.
Yes. And they've kind of put themselves in that scenario. Yep.
Schedule better at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, there's that too. All right, Tony, appreciate it as always.
Yes.
We'll be back, another week.
Are we going to be talking next week about a Bengals win?
I think we are.
If not.
I do think that. Am I talking myself into this stupidity?
If we're not talking about a Bengals win next week.
You better look at the Jets down the road and Miami down the road.
I can't wait for the announced attendance for the Jets-Bengals.
I believe that's December 1st. I'm doing that
off
the top of my head.
Should be a great month of December because December 22nd, they're going to head into Miami.
I know.
That should be fun.
The winless bowl.
Oh.
I think they surprise you with a win.
The get-right game for the Bengals.
Everybody's got to have one.
Right now,
the Bengals are the get-right team.
I'm telling you right now, Cliff Kingsbury, this is his get-right game.
This is his get-right game. Exactly right.
He's like, we're going to get our first win.
I'm sure that's how he's selling it. Oh, my heavens. All right, Tony, enjoy Friday night. It should be a fun atmosphere at Nippert Stadium as UC gets set to take on UCF. We'll be back next week. We'll be back on our normal time slot this week because of the Monday night game. We had to move it back a day, but we appreciate you listening. And for Tony Pike, I'm Richard Skinner. This has been the Angry Quarterbacks from the James Rapine Memorial Studio and your friends at ESPN Media.